This is Queer Voices.
This is Brian Levinka, and in the studio we have some members of the oldest continuous LGBT organization in the country, 65 years strong and going. That is, of course, the Diana Foundation, and in the studio I have Brandon Wolf, Tanner Williams, and John Heinzerling. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
So there's a book coming out that covers the history of the Diana Foundation. I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about that. And I'm looking at you, Brandon, because you are the author of this book.
Yes, I am.
So where did this book come from? What was the idea behind the book? And why did you want to document all this history?
Well, it actually started out as an Outsmart story exactly 10 years ago. 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was then the Dianas were interested in publishing a book. So I sold them the rights to the manuscript, to publish the manuscript.
And so where did you get all this information from? I'm sure there was a lot of boxes tucked away in, like, attics and under beds and stuff.
I got some of it from videotapes of the Diana shows,
mm-hmm.
Some of the former Diana shows. I got others from... the Botts collection
mm-hmm.
Actually had a file that was most likely the working file of the founder, one of the founders of the Dianas, Charles Hebert, because it had stuff in there from 1964 on through 87 when he died.
So I think before we get too much further, we should kind of maybe tell our audience what the Diana Foundation is if they may not know. And how did the Diana Foundation get started? So tell us some of the history, Tanner or John.
Go ahead, Tanner.
Thanks, John. Well, actually, it was in 1953 when the Academy Awards was first being televised. A group of friends gathered for an Oscars watch party. And unfortunately, the bunny ears on the television lost reception. But the party continued. And this group of friends decided to come up with their own version of their Academy Awards. The following year, the same group of friends, plus a few more, gathered again to try this again. And they had a successful party. But before they started, the host of the party, David Moncrief, he actually offered the first official Diana Award, and they had their fun roast at the beginning of this party. And it was actually at their home that they had a statue of the goddess Diana, the goddess of the hunt, and they thought she was partying along with them. So thus, you need some type of name of your academy, so the Diana Foundation was born.
So I guess in those days it was a lot harder to be gay, to be openly gay. So was there historical information from back then? I guess there wasn't recordings of the shows. What did you find back then, I guess, Brandon?
Well, actually one of the most difficult things for me to do was crack this time barrier of 1975. When I first talked to the Dianas, either people didn't remember before 75, or they just wanted to talk about 75 on, because 75 was when they really went big time. When they went,
What does that mean, big time?
To the Sheraton. Well, they went to the Sheraton.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they had much more room to seat people. They had a stage where they could have more elaborate production numbers, and finally, it was just a coincidence that I had written a story about Sandy Bubbert, who owns Acadian Bakery,
mm-hmm.
a couple months before. And I was in there eating lunch one day, and she asked me what I was working on for Outsmart, and I said, a story about the Dianas. And I said, well, I'm kind of depressed because I just can't get anything before 75. And she introduced me to someone named Jonna Mueller, who had been at the first party.
Oh, wow.
So that just, like, blew my mind. And after I talked to Jonna, then she mentioned some other people that I started to email, and they started emailing other people. And I talked to people either in person or on the phone. And I was so fascinated with the pre-Stonewall information.
Yeah.
Because that was, you know, I I kept thinking, the oldest organization and the gay organization in the country is in Houston. That just isn't what you'd think. Yeah, you'd think it'd be like New York or
right.
San Francisco. But so that really encouraged me to really start digging.
And so what are some of the things that you've learned from that time period?
One of the interesting things is that actually at that point there was, up until Stonewall, the Dianas, there was more gender parity in there than there is today. Because back then, when gay people partied, they always had to make sure they had a 50-50 parity.
Oh, right.
Because neighbors would wonder,
why are there only dudes in the room?
Yeah, why are there only 20 dudes going into that house? Or, you know, 20
or in
women?
The bars, they would be raided and you would have to pair up. Is that right?
Well, they didn't go out to bars that much because what I heard about that period was that most of the bars were... what few there were usually like in the basements of hotels, mm-hmm. and it was mostly hustlers and traveling salesmen that went to them. What people did was they had house parties, mm-hmm. and that was the social circle. So that was the other thing I learned.
So this kind of grew out of, I guess, a big house party over time.
Yeah. Because that's really what it was a kind of a house party. It was a.
I think at one point, you know, Brandon talks a little bit about one of the, when they eventually the house they outgrew the several houses, so they had to keep bouncing around. Even I think from one of the last parties at one of David Moncrief's newest homes at the time, they had like several television sets strung out across the backyard, extension cords everywhere with a big tent. Because you would still do the funny awards, but then everyone would still watch the Academy
Awards. Of course,
awards.
They're yeah. gay. Of course, they're gay. If you're joining us, we're speaking with folks from the Diana Foundation about an upcoming history book that's celebrating the 65th anniversary of the Diana Foundation. So I guess one of my questions is, how does this organization stay relevant for 65 years? I mean, organizations come and go, but how does Diana's, what's the secret to the Diana Foundation? Everybody's looking at you, John.
Oh, yes. It's tough. I mean, the golden age of the Dianas was the late 70s and the 80s when the shows were so great, and people came in from all across the country to see them. We have morphed into we're still doing the awards, mm-hmm. and we are still doing some of the show type things, though they have been reduced considerably, and we are bringing in a new younger crowd. Mm-hmm. To kind of take us where we go next, and that's been a tough thing for us to adjust to, but we're working on it, and actually Tanner is a good example of where we've been going. And
well, I appreciate you calling me young still. Thanks, John. I would say that Brandon did note in some of his closing arguments that activist Ray Hill here commented in the book that the reason why the Dianas have lasted for so long is that we're not a political organization, that we're a social organization.
Right.
And anything about the Dianas, it's we've always been a network of friendships.
Mm-hmm.
And as new folks continue to join and take part in with the organization, we get, you know, fresh ideas and fresh energy, and people like each other and want to hang out, and understanding through our history too, we continue to raise substantial dollars to give back to our community. And you know, raising money is still extremely important. There's still a big there's still a lot of need out there,
mm-hmm.
and
oh, of course.
I think people still understand the value of gathering to have a little bit of fun, but knowing that your fun is actually going to generate dollars that's going to help several thousands of people.
Now, the Dianas are partnering with the U of H LGBT Resource Center, now the archives, I guess, I've heard.
Yes, absolutely, we are. And
so instead of just having boxes spread around the city, you're kind of consolidating things so they can be archived and preserved, I assume.
Exactly. We've had a pretty tough time gathering it all because some
65 years worth of,
and a lot of it has been lost to time. But
if
but
you
what,
work with John Heinzenling, he's going to give you a box of something.
what has happened, or what did happen in the early days, starting in the late 70s again, was they started video or taping. It was four videos, but taping the shows, and so we have done a lot of that and upgraded them too.
So you digitized those, I assume?
Yes.
Those videos?
Yeah, actually through this book process, and you know, this by the way, this project for our book has been 100% you know funded through generous donations of folks, and you know through that process we've been able to digitize several thousand film negatives and picture prints dating back to the early 70s all the way up through the 90s. Of course, then most photography was becoming digitized already at that time. This even took out, we were able to help digitize portions of the Dalton DeHart for his foundation as well and do some cross work there. Dalton has been a big contributor of photos throughout the years since the mid 90s. So all of this material we are going to be able to turn over to the Diana Archive at the University of Houston, including the entire process of this book. So folks who are doing research could even see all the notes and the I guess written arguments that we have on the pages about what should go where.
So how does one become a Diana member? What's the process?
They can visit, folks can visit thedianafoundation.org, and there's membership information there as well. You can apply, but the best thing you can do, if you don't know any Diana members in the community, just go on to our Facebook page or to the website, send us an email. We will be sure to connect you to one of our upcoming events and introduce. I think one of the best things in the city of Houston is just how many great historical, like, you know, institutions of organizations to get plugged into and how the networks cross over with each other. The Dianas were a big part of that. Kind of a centerpiece of
before this. Before there was, you know, before gay was being gay was cool.
We spelled it out for folks. Yeah. But if folks are interested, we'll get folks plugged in. We do two major events and some other activities. But we do have our big book event coming up on May the 5th. So that is a great way to come out and talk with us.
So tell us about that. That's this Sunday.
Yep.
And what, it's a book signing event. Who's going to be there? Tell me about it.
Well, on Sunday, May the 5th, it's our big book release party. We're going to be at the Westin Memorial City Hotel from 2 to 5 p.m. We have special remarks at 3:15. We'll have Brandon signing books. We'll also have John Heinzerling and also the current president of the Diana Foundation, Dan Maxwell.
Dan Maxwell, that's right. So, Brandon, you're going to be signing books.
Yeah, I'm an author.
He's practiced. He's been practicing.
I've been practicing my autograph.
So anything else you want our listeners to know before we go about the book signing party, the book, the history of the Dianas?
Just that Houston has real reason to be proud of the Dianas, because only one organization in the country can say that they are the oldest continually active gay organization in the country, and that happens to be the Dianas in Houston, Texas.
Little old Houston, Texas has the oldest LGBT organization.
Yep.
Tanner, what else would you like our listeners to know?
Well, if folks are interested in the book itself, you can visit DianaHistoryBook.com. That's DianaHistoryBook.com. You can learn more about the book. You can talk more with Brandon. You'll see his bio. But after May the 5th, we will eventually have an online flip book for folks, and folks will be able to download the book for free as well and print it out. We want to make sure that this information is being provided for folks to become educated for research purposes. We did all the fundraising for a reason. We want to share the history and Brandon's story with everyone.
John, anything you want to add to that?
Yes, this book is important for a couple of other reasons as well. This is not only the history of the Diana organization, but because it started in 1953 when being gay was quite different from what it is today. It is the history of Houston, mm-hmm. and there is a great deal about Houston within this book. There are multiple pictures. It's really a table, a coffee table book. It's of that size, not just regular book size. So I hope people will take a look at it and will take a look at the story and the pictures because it says a lot about our past history.
Very good. If you're joining us, we were speaking with Brandon Wolf, Tanner Williams, and John Heiserling about the Diana Foundation 65th Annual Book. For more information, go to dianahistorybook.com. Anything else, gentlemen?
Well, Brian, I just want to say thank you again for, you know, asking us to be here today to talk, you know, more about the Dianas. We're obviously really invested and excited about it, but I also want to thank you for all of the work that you do in the community,
too. Well, thank you. You're welcome. I appreciate it. And you're listening to Queer Voices.